This Dharma talk was given to the Clearway Zen Sangha by Lotus Vu. This talk is made available free of charge. More information about Clearway Zen can be found at www.clearwayzen.ca.
As a kid, I learned this word of feng now. It means disturbance of the brain. And now it's a brain. So they call computer a mechanical brain. So the Zen tradition, this attempt of teaching of life is full of mental disturbance. that it is an affliction that is in some ways really normal. Normal part of human experiences. And when you've learned of, you know, practicing Zen is about being grounded in the present, in the now, you're like, well, now I may have all kinds of things going on. It can be filled with all of our ideas and thoughts. And they in and of themselves is not a problem, but it's when we grasp and hold on to them and believing in them, they become a problem. So our mental habits are that of mental disturbance. By trying to control the future through our thoughts in the present. There's a big case of mental disturbance. Can we really do that? Not really. I've discovered years ago there's a difference between planning and controlling. Planning is, okay, this might happen. Would like us to happen. Controlling is, I want it to happen. It needs to happen. Right? And the word ought or should happen. And as every farmer knows in Saskatchewan, that's not something you can do. Right? It's nice, you know, every year get rain, great for the planting and seeding, but it doesn't happen like that every year. And you wonder why. Farmers are in the business of farming because they're completely vulnerable to the elements. They have absolutely no control over it. And then at every spring, they sit in anxiety, looking at the weather, whether the rain will come enough for the seeding. And I think this is where it all started, the anxiety. Because we started to try to live in an environment where there needs to be control or some sort of form of control in order for us to survive. Most of human life before in human history was live in a way that more harmonious with the elements. We live as hunters and gatherers. So if things don't turn well in one area, we move to the next. Not really trying to control the population of deer or bison in that area. Just move to the next one that there is, you know, enough food. And once we start becoming agrarian and fixed in one place, we yearn desperately to control the elements, to control the environment. And in some ways, we successfully do it at some point. It allows us to thrive. But with this thriving for survival, we also develop something else called anxiety. Through that need, perpetual need to control everything around us. things have to fall in place for this to happen. If this doesn't happen, then you don't have enough grain for the next year. So whole civilization rise and fall to the tides of the weather. Yeah. I remember watching a documentary of Angkor Wat, and they had a beautiful civilization built up with immense engineering and irrigations and the whole system of that city. And then it died because the environment failed. They were the victims of their own success by overpopulation, and the irrigations and everything just failed. And then it got reclaimed back by the jungle because people just moved off. Well, when the builders of Angkor Wat built that place, they didn't think it would last that short. It's so majestic and magnificent. They thought it'd be solid for 1,000 years. And it did stood the test of time, except nobody's there. We human beings are under the illusion all the time that we can't control our environment. We can't control what happens next. And it has to happen the way we want to. And that's where all the anxiety comes from. That's where a lot of our anxiety comes from. That's where a lot of our mental disturbances comes from. We sit here and we meditate and we're like, how come it's not quiet enough? There's bagpipes going in the background. Close the window. Bagpipes outside are not going anymore, but I think they're practicing some sort of instrument in the next room. Right? How many retreats have I gone to that they, you know, people desperately try to have a very quiet environment to meditate in, only to find out that the birds are really noisy. Right? Or that it's scorching hot and the fan is really noisy, and they like turn off the fan to reduce the sound for meditation purposes. And it's insanity. We try to control so much of our environment to have it a certain way, but that is a futile attempt, because when we go out and experience real life, how much control do we really have? Very little. We can't control how other people are going to react to us. We can't control how our plans are going to go. We can't control how the future is going to look for us, even tomorrow. We try, but we can't. I built some rain barrels last week. I was so proud of them. Put in a nice fancy diverter into the downspouts. And then we had some awesome rain in the last few days. Barely filled up 5%. Yeah, the system works great, except I don't know, for some reason the rain was not going through that downspout. I was so proud of it until there was no water. Spent a whole long time on that. See, that's the beauty of life, is that if you, in your mind, you are tied to a particular result, have a particular expectation, life always throws a wrench in it. It's there to frustrate you. Okay? And then you do things without any expectations and it yields great results. I bought these crappy rain barrel system from somebody who used. Put it under, you know, my other downspouts in the garage, and I don't think it would fill up very fast because the roof of the garage is so much smaller than the house. Whole thing got filled up, all five of them. I was like, great, I can water the lawn with it now. But no, all that elaborate rain barrel system that I created, you did nothing. You see? So if we are tied to the result of whatever we're doing, we're setting ourselves up for disappointment, for frustration, for eventual, what? Anxiety, disturbance of the mind. Anxiety is trying to control the future. Fear of the unknown, right? And what's the path? Regrets, could have done things differently. And that's depression. But if we had just accept things as they are, okay, that didn't work. Gonna have to move that over to another down spot. Start over. Right? That's probably more an effective way of being. Why? Because you can respond to what's happening instead of making meaning or senses out of it. Why? It was such a crappy, you know, home engineer downspout, rain barrel designer. When you start making meaning out of what's happening, that's where the problem comes in. It's more than what's happening. It's your identity tied with what's happening. And then the problem of identifying with a verb is problematic. What is a verb? Action. Everything in life is a verb. It's constantly moving, changing, action. Right? What is an identity? Pretty much a noun. Something we believe to be fixed. And the problem with nouns and verbs is that you constantly have to change the noun to fit the verb. And if the noun fit the verb, then well, we try to delude ourselves that the noun still works. That's the problem, right? I counsel a number of people over the years, and what I've seen a reoccurring theme is young people look into the future, trying to establish their identity. As Thich Nhat Hanh says, a young person is like a person sitting on a train looking forward, as a train moving forward, and is anxious about what they're going to be. An old person is like a person sitting on the train, on the seat that's looking backwards, and doesn't want anything that's here, loves to live in the past and what they had been. And there's plenty of that when you go to the hospital palliative care or nursing homes. You listen to the people and they're like, I used to be this guy. I had this life. It was great. And Nobody wants to say, I'm in a wheelchair. I'm getting spoon-fed. Right? That's not what they're looking for in their day. The problem is when we can't accept reality as it is and be contented with it, we end up living in the past or the future. And sometimes the future for a lot of us is fear. Because we don't see a clear picture within our control. I call it opportunity. Because when we don't see a clear picture within our control, that means that you're plotting a new course. It's opportunity. It's chance to grow out of your own comfort zone and rediscover or discover what reality is instead of what you want it to be. For most of us, living life is about what we want reality to be instead of what it actually is. Right? How do we want it to be instead of what it is? Because when we acknowledge what it is, we realize there's much work to be done. It's like, honestly, people think Zen is about sitting still and, you know, chilling out and being really relaxed and lazy. You guys know me for what, 10, 15 years? Do I look like that? Yeah, outside of the meditation sitting, what am I doing most of the time? I'm pretty busy. Always doing something. But doing something with a different mentality, with a different way of being. All the Zen masters that I know of are pretty busy. They're doing something with a different mentality. Mentality is doing what is here 100%. So I've noticed in the doing that a lot of us, there's 50% here in the doing, and then there's 50% in the thinking about what I mean, might turn out from the doing. Right? Sometimes even more. 80% of it is in the idea of what the doing might turn out. Being anxious about it. Or anticipation of the good results. The anxiety and the anticipation. I'm not the only one saying about this. They did study about it. But it's the same physiological response, anxiety and anticipation. It's just the only difference is your mind labels differently. And then develops a liking to it or a disliking to it. So after you practice Zen for a while, the joy that comes out of anticipation, you know, is the same as the anxiety. You just look at it and you see, oh, not cracked up. And you pretty much let go of both. So for most people, the joy of anticipation is very exhilarating, and that's what they're desiring. But for a long time Zen practitioner, is the same as anxiety. Because it is the same physiological process. It's suffering. is the mind moving towards controlling the future. While it's doing that, ruminating in the present. Because as we all know, we can't escape the present. Try not being in the present. Try not living in the present. You can't. Because the future, it's just an idea. That's not here yet. And when it finally unfolds to become here, it's the present, it's no longer the future. So every future is an idea. Happening in the present as you're thinking about it. Right? Every past is a memory and an idea of that memory. I'm not even sure if that memory recorded properly. Your idea of that memory colors it. You know, I used to work in the courtroom and how witnesses remember what happened versus you turn on the camera, you know, the CCTV. You're like, oh, that's what happened. You see? But they swore it's that. So our memory is pretty unreliable. Even for the person who has like pretty good memory like me, I learned that memories are subject to interpretations. And that's the past. Our past are lovely story we weave, that we authored. It's a fiction, even though it's grounded in reality, like Dan Brown's work, you know? Great, it's very riveting fiction. Somewhat grounded in reality with a little bit of conspiracy theory. I love Dan Brown's book, it's fun. It's fun because it's grounded in reality, right? Some of it. He takes a bunch of facts and he throws in with some conspiracy theory. Riveting reading, right? And that's how our life is for most of us. We're authoring this beautiful Dan Brown novel. Except that who wants to live in a thriller? Good luck. As they have old say in China, you know, may you live in interesting times. I live in a thriller. So, when we practice Zen, we have to see through all of this. When we're able to see through all of this and seeing how our mind authors and co-author reality with other people's input. Of course, other people's input is their own fiction as well. So you've got two people co-writing a fiction. And then arguing over the, you know, the detail of the fiction. We have mental disturbance. But of course, this is all very enjoyable, isn't it? Who goes to the movies and expects 3 hours of nothing? Right? No, you expect to laugh and cry. And be on the edge of your seat, right? See some nice things blowing up. Oh. And if that's happening, we call it a boring movie. See, that's what grabs our attention. And of course, in our mind as well, that grabs our attention. The drama really grabs our attention. You ever go on a date and the other person's like desperately trying to make you feel good by doing something exciting? Let's plan a trip to Paris. I had somebody offered me that one time when I went on a date. And I said, why so much work? And he says, I just want to make you feel happy. And I said, I can be happy looking at a wall. That's when you realize that you don't have to go to the external to look for a source of joy, a source of contentment. That's when I realized that my dating life was over. Because, you know, it's like looking, normally we are looking for other people to make us happy. And when that person doesn't make us happy, we're like, why aren't you? You're supposed to be here to make me happy. You're not doing a job. But then they're looking at us and we're like, you're supposed to make me happy too. We're not really congruent here. How's that working for you? The funny thing is when we get into these kind of arrangements, each one of those individual person doesn't know how to make themselves happy. How are they going to make the other person happy? And this is essentially what we're looking for in a romantic relationship. In any relationship, actually. I want to spend some time with you as a friend. So, you know, the time we spend together, better be happy. If you're not happy and you're ranting to me about all your problems, okay, I'm busy next time. That's most of us, right? So this is our expectations about life. We're looking in the external. We're looking to the future and the past to make us happy. We're looking to other people, to the environment to make us okay. Very few of us realize that it comes from the inside. It's an inside job. Then is an inside job. I'm not saying don't change the environment. But you got to change yourself first to realize your environment's not that great. So you need to change the environment too. Right? If you don't realize how unhappy you are or how, you know, the environment is affecting you internally, how can you even work to change the environment? You can't. So then it starts first with the inside job. Once you get the inside job correctly, then the outside job starts going. Because if you were so unhappy with yourself inside, how much would you be likely to go and plant some flowers? Right? To make your house look nice, go shopping for some nice clothes. You know? How much would you be willing to change your environment? You wouldn't. I treat people with severe depression. A lot of them don't do anything in their environment because they're too depressed to do anything. Sometimes they give up bathing, showering, brushing their own teeth. Never mind cleaning up their room. How do I know they start to heal? That's when they start cleaning up the room. That's when they go, oh my God, the place is messy. And they start working on this. And I can do it. I think the biggest difference in Zen practice that I've learned is that we have very little control over life. What we do have control over is what we're going to do now. Not what we're going to do in the future. What we're going to do now. That's the only place where we do have control. Sometimes. Why? Because if it rains, you're running for cover. Or getting a raincoat. So in some regards, practicing Zen is about letting go. Not just letting go of the ideas we have in our head about what reality is, but letting go of control. And it's tremendously vulnerable. Why do you think it's vulnerable? Letting go of control is very vulnerable. Why is it? Yes, that's it. The mind loves the known. This is how it's going to happen. This is what's going to happen. I plan it happening. But as you know, every plan has a change of plan. Because being the most adaptable is about being able to adapt to the changing environment. Human beings have perfected the art of control. How do we do that? By technologies. By predicting how things are going to change. I mean, even 3,000-4,000 years ago, they had a book of changes, the I Ching in China, to predict how the weather's going to change, how things are going to change. We become the master of control. And then we anxiously are tied to the result of that. If awful things are going to happen, what we're going to do is we're going to create some marriage and try to buffer it, you know? Go donate some money to the temple, burn some incense, pray to the stars. Maybe sacrifice some stuff. That's our way of control. I know we might be laughing at it now, but it helped people back then. They truly believed it. You know, it's not that much different for us right now. You know? We don't rely on the I Ching, we rely on statistics, right? It's still the same thing. It's just a more evolved mechanism. So we've grown a little more mature. We realize that things are kind of moving and changing. We just get better at predicting things, build better technology to deal with it. Still all about control. And it really helps us survive. It really does. but doesn't help us thrive. Because we're constantly anxious of what will change next, right? We're no longer sitting in the unknown, sitting in the mystery. Who here has heard the, you know, the phrase, being in the mystery is spirituality? You never heard of that, eh? That's actually the highest practice of the Catholic Church. I heard it when one of the person was interviewing about the conclave. And a cardinal says, you know, it's more like a retreat. It's not like political wrangling. Everybody's just kind of going in there and pray and then just like give it to the mystery and just puts the name in. Right? It's being in the mystery. So the highest form of Zen practice is about not knowing anything. Being in the mystery. And when I tell you I know something, I really actually don't really believe it. Because in my experience of practice is that as soon as I'm feeling certain about something, life always comes over and tells me it's not. The only certain thing is uncertainty. That doesn't sound reassuring. But resting in that uncertainty, resting in that unknowing, resting in that mystery allows us to be able to respond the most effectively to a changing environment as it unfolds. Because we're no longer tied to a particular result. We're on a journey of discovery. Living a little bit gypsy. But that's what our ancestors used to do for thousands and thousands of years before we started farming. They were hunters and gatherers. They were living in the mystery of the environment, not knowing where the next meal is going to come from. Really vulnerable. The reason why the population wasn't high that time. But at the same time, they were harmonious with their environment. And they certainly didn't have the same anxiety we do now. Probably not living better, but mentally, it's a different state of mind. We're living better and miserably. It's a trade-off. Evolution favors the most miserable. It's about survival, not happiness. So how do we let go of control? We have to recognize that every thought that goes through our head is only an idea. Nothing more, nothing less. It is when things unfold in the present, that's when the reality becomes real. Every idea that comes across our head about the past and the future, it is just that. It's an idea. R. Dan Brown's greatest fiction. Da Vinci Code. So once you recognize that it is itself is just an idea, you're no longer affixed to it. You no longer built an identity over it. Then you become much more fluid. Fluid. In your expression and life in the present. when you're no longer holding reality to a particular standards or, you know, kind of particular way of doing things, when it doesn't behave the way you want, you're like, okay, how do I deal with this? Instead of, I should have been that way. So I see the Zen practice as removing all your shoulds, which in mental health, arena, removing all your shoulds is tremendously helpful for well-being. Why? Because life is not a should. It shouldn't happen, but it does anyway. That's the, how many times you see that and you hear that in life, right? So embrace it. This is it. This is what it is. It is what it is. What are you going to do about it? Oh, well, we're going to have to do this. Oh, I don't like that when that happens. Well, too bad. It is what it is. Can you really choose? No. You have very little choice in the matter. And as soon as you able to embrace letting go of the things you cannot change and focusing on the things that you can, you see a huge window of opportunity opening. Life becomes much easier. Much, much easier to be. I'm not saying that you won't experience sadness. You won't experience grief. You won't experience the full gamut of human experience. You will. It becomes much easier. Much easier to experience and appreciate. Because that's life. If it ain't a ride, it's not life. I'll leave my last words for today from Chicken Little. Sky's falling. Then I concluded with Chicken Run. I saw my life flash before my eyes and it was really boring. Would you rather have that? I'm pretty sure most of us do not want that. So enjoy the ride. And remember that if it's boring, it's not life. Just don't make it more exciting by adding, you know, Dan Brown Thriller on top, right? And that's what I've learned from my Zen practice. It's still a ride. It's a lot more fun. Thank you, everyone, for listening to me ramble about Dan Brown.
This podcast is created by members of the Clearway Zen Sangha. If you enjoyed the talk and wish to show support, donation information can be found on our website, www.clearwayzen.ca. Thank you for listening.